Okay, Chris, so today we talk with Kristen DiCervo, the Chief Academic Officer of Khan Academy. Before we even started, you know, and pressed record, you were having a conversation with Kristen and actually thanking her. I think it's important that we tell our listeners what you were thanking her for.
My 10-year-old daughter suffers from her father's inability to do mathematics well. So we contacted her math teacher. Her math teacher recommended Khan Academy. We spent a couple evenings utilizing their services. Oh my gosh, my daughter loved it. You know, she turned this really bad grade that she had in that classroom around, made a 95 on her recent test. Oh my goodness. So we love it. So I was able to say thank you to one of the people responsible for creating it. And that was just an excellent experience to kind of, I don't know, firsthand see how awesome that was. So.
And you were likely unaware, right? So here then, Kristen and I started talking about, you know, what the Khan Academy is doing specific to AI. You were unaware of KhanMigo and what that had, right? I mean, I assume that as I'm talking with Kristen, you were learning a lot more about what Khan Academy actually has available for kids, right?
Yeah, I mean, the KhanMigo concept, I mean, that's amazing that something that useful or potentially useful can be that easily accessible for any kid or district or like that, and it's such a reasonable price. I mean, so that's, for me, it's a no-brainer. So not to make this an advertisement or anything, but that I'm excited as a parent. So
no, in fact, we have no shares in, you know, Khan Academy or KhanMigo, so that's not our intent. But our intent is this, that educational leaders need to be aware of some of the resources, some of the learning, some of the innovations happening, maybe even right under our noses. And, you know, sadly, it's not even the leader's fault that at times they don't have the space or capacity to spend time focusing on that. So that's what we do, right? On behalf of them, we have these discussions in a leader chat, which is why, you know, talking with Kristen DiCervo was so great, because she brings this wealth of knowledge of what's happening to us so that we can be aware. And as she says, everyone, you will see, operate in a sense of hope as opposed to fear.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy Kristen. This is a great conversation. Ladies, gentlemen, teachers, educators, leaders, welcome to Leader Chat. I'm Jeff Rose, and I am continuing this discussion on a series that we're focusing on. We're not necessarily bringing on guests one at a time, but we started about a month ago, and we'll continue on with a couple of iterations on something that we are really pushing educational leaders to think about, to constantly question, to learn how to embrace, which is AI. And this is important for so many reasons, but what we do know is that the educational leader is so swamped and challenged to find time and capacity as a learner to engage in what is some recent research and different innovations that are either here or on the way. So it is our goal to find experts in this particular area. And we are so thankful to just find incredible rock star educators who are doing amazing things throughout the country and worldwide. And today is a perfect example of that. So I'm going to be any minute welcoming Kristen DiCervo. And now, Kristen is the Chief Learning Officer at Khan Academy. So if you've been paying any attention, just know that right there is a very, very big deal. Where she is, she sets the teaching and learning strategy for the company and ensures a consistent research-based pedagogical approach to all of their offerings. She's led the content, product management, and customer support teams, most recently in the launch of KhanMigo, an AI-based tutor and teacher assistant. We're going to be talking about that, obviously. Throughout her career, she's focused on the design of interactive digital technologies for learning and assessment. She has led teams focused on embedding learning science into curricula and learning tools. She's participated in exciting simulation and game-based assessment projects, including working with Glass Lab, developing SimCity EDU and Mars Generation 1. Prior to joining the Khan Academy, she was the Vice President of Learning, Research, and Design at Pearson. She provided research support in the networking academies at Cisco and was a psychologist in a local school district in Arizona. And the reason we wanted to, of course, talk to Kristen is that over the last year and a half, I have been following what's happening at Khan Academy related to AI. I have heard their CEO, Sal Khan, talk about this a number of times. I'm so excited to invite Kristen to the screen. So, Kristen, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Now, I read your bio. I actually, I need to figure out a new strategy because reading a person's bio as they're just like waiting to come on is uncomfortable to read it. So probably a little uncomfortable to hear it too.
It is.
So, and it's, right, it's such a summary of, it doesn't go into the most important thing. So tell us about yourself, maybe what's driven you to this work. Fill in between the lines for us, maybe include kind of, you know, your driving why, whatever that may be, but help us learn a little bit more about not just your work, but who you are and your motivations. Can you do that?
Absolutely. So I do feel like this role that I'm in now is the culmination of a whole bunch of different experiences that all kind of led me here, which is a great place to be in. But when I think about the why or why I'm doing this, I go back to actually a pretty formative experience I had in high school. And in high school, I got the opportunity to tutor some middle school students who were struggling. And honestly, high school came kind of easy to me. Like, I did well in school. I knew how to play the game. You know, I could do all of that. And it was such an eye-opener for me to work with kids who were really struggling and started me thinking, how do different people learn? How can we help them learn if they're struggling with whatever topic they're working on? What are things we could do to help improve that? And so you can see that as a thread through most of what I've been doing. And I initially went to graduate school in an educational psychology program, but it was a school psychology training program. And I thought I was going to be a school psychologist for most of my career. For those who aren't aware, school psychologists in schools don't do most of the counseling. They're actually focused on learning and identifying students with learning differences. They kind of help students get connected to special education services. And so I did that for a couple of years and then really started to think about how technology could help these students who, again, were struggling to learn, needed extra support, needed additional practice that they weren't getting in schools. And that led me to educational technology, where I've spent almost 20 years now, which I can't believe it's been that amount of time, just designing, researching, and understanding educational technology and how it can fit into classrooms and help students achieve more.
So I'm curious about that transition from, you know, you mentioned obviously your experience as a tutor when you were in high school, and by the way, you were the kind of student that frustrated me watching people like you from afar, or you were the kind of student that tutored people like me. But you mentioned how that contributed to, you know, some things later. But how did you go from psychology? And then what was the jump to technology? I mean, maybe fill that in for me, because that's interesting.
Sure. So one of the things that I would do as a school psychologist was do a lot of classroom observations, including both the special education classrooms where students were being pulled out into small groups and doing individual resource work. And one of the things that happened, because we were in a district that was struggling with resources, was our special education teachers, which we know nationwide there's a shortage of special education teachers. This was true in the early 2000s as well, was that our special education teachers were emergency certified folks. Their hearts were in the right places. They wanted to do the right things, but they didn't have really much background at all in terms of how do students learn, how to help students with learning disabilities, differences in learning, what that looks like. And so it was starting to think about if these students could get some individualized practice that was really tuned to where they were and what their needs were, could that help them succeed? And then I was, how could students get that kind of experience? Well, technology, because we just can't scale the teachers we have to helping each individual student think about how we can help them at the particular place they're at. Even just recently, I was in a classroom with about 25 students working on college algebra, and they would get stuck as they were working on some individual practice, and they'd raise their hand and wait for Ms. Vasquez to come over and check in with them. But they're sitting there for, you know, 5, 7, 10 minutes waiting for the teacher who's doing the best she can working through the room, trying to get that individual help for folks. But again, if we think about what can technology do to help students, we know that students need that when they're working at that edge of what they can be successful at, they need just a little bit of support to help them get over the edge. And that's really tough to do get a human teacher to do that for every student in the classroom. So thinking about technology as a way to scale what we know is good learning practice.
And that'll be really the focus of our conversation. Specific to AI is that concept of, you know, scaling best practice. I think that there's still, and as I mentioned in the intro, a lot of misunderstanding and fear and maybe some levels of curiosity, but also some people really wanting to keep some of this in arm's length for understandable reasons. And so our job through this discussion is to describe what is currently we are learning. When I say we, I'm talking about the educational community. And in this case, we're going to be learning through you. So that's the goal, is how do we help educational leaders specifically understand what's happening underneath them, and then maybe even what's ahead of them. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes sense. And I understand why people might be both skeptical and a little reluctant to embrace what seems like, is this the next new thing we've been hearing about? I remember in 2012, there was a big personalized learning push, and technology was going to save us. And there was talk of, I think there was an actual quote from someone who was talking about robot tutors in the sky, you know, and here we are 10 years later, and we're like, this never happened. It seems like we hear about this every, you know, 10 years, and it never comes to pass. Like, I get why folks might be skeptical in where things are. I am optimistic that there are some things about AI and the more recent advances that put us in a better place. But just want to give some empathy to folks that are a little bit not sure if this is something they really want to dive into right now.
So I remember, you know, Khan Academy a long time ago, right? I remember when it started. I remember kind of when it was launched, and then all of a sudden it grew in popularity. But since then, it's really changed. And so specifically, you have embraced the learning and potential of AI within your infrastructure. So can you tell us about that narrative of kind of where this started, what you've learned, and kind of where it is now? Let's just kind of dig into what's happening at Khan Academy and how that's currently spreading.
Sure. So as you say, Khan Academy has for years been the place where students can interact with our exercises and get practice and watch Sal's videos that he is famous for, which, you know, just do a great job of helping students feel like, oh, here's my just slightly older cousin who's kind of informally explaining this to me. And people really respond to that. And we know, so we've done efficacy studies that show just that Khan Academy, if students use that 30 minutes a week, that we see gains about 30% above the test norms on a test like the NWA's MAP Growth. So we know that students who use Khan Academy without any AI at all are succeeding and getting that boost that they need and that they're looking for. August of 2022, Sal got an email from some folks this guy named Sam Altman and this other guy named Greg Brockman. And they said, hey, we're working on training this new AI model, and we'd like to talk to you about it. And Sal was curious, as Sal always is. And so he and I met with them. Now, for the folks who are plugged in, you know, those are the names of the folks that run OpenAI, which is one of the companies making these models.
So this was August 2022, right? So I'm putting this into my mental image or timeline of, you know, when we started to
this truly... This is before ChatGPT even came out. So ChatGPT came out in November of that year. So this is about 4 months before anyone had heard of that. I will admit that I had to do some, like, investigative research to figure out what LLM, large language model, meant and what that looked like. But we took this meeting with them, and it turns out there's a little bit of backstory that they have some funding, and Bill Gates had told them on their previous version, hey, this is interesting, but don't come back to me until it can pass AP Bio. And so they needed more questions to test whether it could pass AP Bio. And at Khan Academy, we have a whole bunch of AP Bio questions. That was a bit of what caused them to reach out. But also, they were interested and said, you know, we're going to be launching this model, and we think it could be both have a lot of potential, but it could be pretty scary for people. And we want to show some positive potential use cases. And we think Khan Academy is well positioned as someone who's a nonprofit, is known for free, you know, content for the world, that we think there could potentially be a partnership here. So they gave us access to be able to talk to this new model. This is the model that we now know is called GPT-4. Put this all in context, that November they released what we call ChatGPT. That was on a model that they basically call 3.5. So this was a model that they weren't going to launch till the next March. So they gave it to us access via a Slack bot. So for those, I think folks are mostly familiar with Slack now. You direct message.
Yeah, I am, but just in case, just give us 20 seconds.
Yeah, so it's basically a messaging application. So usually we use it internally at Khan Academy to, you know, direct message each other. But we could direct message the model. And so we could ask it all kinds of questions. We could do all of these kinds of things. And we did basically the same things that anyone who first gets access to these models does. You ask it all kinds of crazy questions. Sal got it to write a poem to his wife, like, you know, all kinds of silliness.
Like we all
but
do.
But we pretty... Exactly. Yeah. Pretty quickly, within the first day, because I've gone back to look at these messages now that we're where we are now. Within the first day, they were like, well, what do you think? And I said, you know, it's great, but it answers all the questions. We want to think about it as a tutor, where it's not just giving students the answer, but helping guide them to getting to the answer. And so... I'm making this a long story long. I apologize.
No, this is important. This is great. This is great.
So they said, oh, you can tell it how you want it to act through writing something called a prompt. And so if you tell it first, hey, you are a tutor, I am a student, you should help me get to the answer instead of giving me the answer, it would act like a tutor. And I was like, really? So I put in, you know, about three sentences of this thing that we call a prompt. And sure enough, it started to change. And instead of saying, you know, the answer to 2x minus 5 is, you know, whatever, it would say, well, how would you answer that? I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And so that was the kind of the birth of where we started. And we essentially took... We every year, of course, have a roadmap of all of the new features we're going to plan to build. We took that entire roadmap for the next 6 months and threw it away and said, we're going to work to launch with OpenAI when they launch with this model in March. We're going to launch a tutor that is able to help students. And let's think about some other applications, too. And we ended up also doing some teacher activities that can be an assistant for teachers. So all of that happened. Now I'll tell a little bit more of the story and then we get to launch, which is that then in November, they released ChatGPT. And we were like, What? Oh my gosh, this is crazy. The whole world saw it, but we were under this strict NDA and we couldn't talk about what we were doing at all because we were in line for the next model. So everyone wanted to talk about, what do you think the potential of this is?
And, oh, you and were Sal in line and for I four.
Would just say, oh.
Wait. So
we were in line for four.
Got it. Right? Okay. Got
it. Right. So we just had to say, like, oh, this looks really interesting. This could be, yeah.
People are like, you guys should think about this. You guys.
Right. Oh, yes. People said that to us. Yeah. Like, you should really think of it. And people are like, what if this could be a tutor? And we were like, yeah, huh? What if it could? Meanwhile, we're building in the background the whole thing. So then
Conmigo.
Right. So then in March, we launched what we call Conmigo. And Conmigo works in a couple of different ways. So for students, if you are on Khan Academy working on a problem, say you're working on an algebra problem, and you can basically pop up Conmigo, who's basically a chat interface, and ask, hey, I'm struggling with this problem. I don't know what to do next. And Conmigo, it basically works as it sends that message that the student writes, I'm stuck. It also sends what we have now done a lot of work to write an extensive prompt, not just those three sentences I was talking about before, but now it's about 300 words or so based on the research about what good human tutors do, the instructions to the model of how to act like a tutor. Mm. We also send the problem that the student's working on Khan Academy. We send the answer to that problem because all of our problems on Khan Academy, we know the answers to, and that helps the model be more accurate if we actually tell the model the answer and don't make it do the math itself. And we give them, we also send all of the hints that we've written for that problem so that the model has those. All of that gets sent up as a one big package in, you know, milliseconds, poof, over to the model. The model responds to the student. Remember, the student said, I'm stuck. The model will say, oh, I see you're, you know, trying to solve an equation with variables on both sides. What do you think your first step should be? And the conversation continues. So that's kind of the basics of the tutoring piece. We also launched a bunch of other kinds of features that we wanted to try out and see what students responded to. Things like chat with a literary figure, debate me, where you can debate with the AI back and forth. So different things that we wanted to see, what did students engage in, what will help students learn, a bunch of different activities like that.
So taking Conmigo and rather than it focusing on, you know, just the answers, right? It's truly prompting the students to kind of analyze even their questions, right? I mean, that's what a tutor would do. It's like, well, you know, you're asking this, but potentially, here's some background that's important for you to know even prior. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah, it really is trying to take what we know good human tutors do and replicate that in a way that we can scale to other students. So we know there's a variety of the research on human tutoring gets quite granular in terms of the different moves a tutor can make. So tutors can explain something, they can ask a question, they can clarify information, they can summarize student information. So all of those are different tutor moves that we try to get Conmigo to make as well in these tutoring situations.
Well, here's another question, and I'll blame you that I'm asking because now I'm just curious. So then as you're learning, as you know, because that's kind of what AI is doing, right? There's this constant learning and evolving happening. I have to assume that what was even originally launched as Conmigo, you mentioned now there's this debate opportunity, et cetera. What are you finding in terms of the level of preciseness and accuracy and complexity that's happening? Is it just constantly evolving and you're just somewhat ahead of it as best you can, or how's that working?
Yeah, so these large language models are a little bit different. They actually don't constantly learn. And part of the data privacy issues that we want to ensure is that actually student data is not used to train these models because people are quite concerned about their information being used to then take, and they don't, you know, what's going on and where is it going in that model and what does that look like? So in fact, these large language models are so big. If you can imagine, you know, billions and billions of individual pieces of information that are all connected to each other, the companies that make them, which again, we couldn't make one ourselves. We don't have the people. We don't have the computing power. These big companies like OpenAI and Google that make them to train them takes weeks and weeks. And so it's not the case that they're constantly evolving in what they do. And so they do release new models every, you know, 3 to 6 months that then we also then take our prompts and have to revise our prompts because those change over time as well. But it's not actually the case that the models, every time you talk to it, the model is learning something new. And so it's an important thing to think about. And it's the balance between understanding and thinking about how these models work and how we can make them better versus making sure that we also keep our students' data secure and deal with all of our data privacy issues.
I assume then that must be extremely important to explaining to the user, right? For example, if I had anxiety about that, say as a parent or a student, and then all of a sudden there's an opportunity to talk with and engage with Conmigo that's providing this interesting insight, that may serve as a little bit of an alarm for some people. Like, whoa, this seems really neat, but I am not willing. So how do you, I mean, I assume you have to really, really be very specific and careful on explaining that to people so they can feel safe.
It definitely is. Districts are, so we have two different ways, and folks may not know this, there's two different ways that students can get access to Khan Academy. One is individual learners who have always been able to go to Khan Academy, and they can pay $4 a month to get access to Conmigo. We also have a district offering that is less known about. And in districts, this started because we would have a whole bunch of individual teachers in a district using Khan Academy. But we know to get to the students who really need us most, we can't rely on them to just find us. And if we're in classrooms and teachers are encouraging use, then we get to those students who are most in need of help. And so we created this district offering actually a number of 3 or 4 years ago. And this then helps with just basic district things. If you're in a school district, you know there's rostering where instead of each teacher having to individually enter all the students in their class, it happens automatically because it links to their system. Yeah. District administrators can see reports, things like that. So you can also get Conmigo as an add-on to that district offering. So some school districts are working with us and then have added it on to their existing district policy. Anyone who works with school districts knows that before school districts adopt anything, there's a rigorous process around legal review, information technology, security policy review, all of that. So we've definitely had to ensure that our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted to make sure that we are able to go through those reviews and have the answers to the questions that folks in districts really want to hear.
Even one who's, like I mentioned before, I've, you know, listened to Sal many times and him on podcasts like we're doing now, but I was unaware until we talked and preparing for this conversation of that district support. Can you maybe delve into a little bit? So now how is it working with districts? Because I assume there's like a lot of mutual learning happening with districts that you're supporting. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that district level support? And of course, not that, you know, I'm nerding out as a past superintendent, but a little bit. So help me understand.
Absolutely. First, we are so grateful for our district partners who have let us, since the launch, come in and observe their classrooms, interview students and teachers to see what's working and what's not working. It really makes a big difference when we can work together with a district as opposed to going off to the side and making something and then bringing it out. Ta-da! How about this? It's a lot better. You know, it creates a lot better experience on both sides if we're working together. So here are some things that we have found. So first is interacting with these models isn't just something that we all naturally know how to do. It's a learning curve to know for a teacher or a student how to interact with a model like this. And the most common issue that happens is someone, the first time they're using it, types in something. So say you're a teacher and you just type in, I would like a lesson plan for, you know, sixth grade on gravity in the solar system. And it's going to produce something that isn't that great. And so the problem then is the person, the user says, oh, this can't do that, and just puts it aside. In interacting with these models, the more you put in, the more you're going to get out. And so if you're a student who's just says, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, you're not going to get as much help as if you say, I don't understand what to subtract from both sides. Oh, that's a very specific question that it can provide a specific answer to. So the professional learning for teachers and then giving teachers materials to help teach their students about how to use technology, we found makes a huge difference. We can see, so, you know, we have all this data on the back end. We can see when our professional learning folks go into the district and offer the professional learning, the change in their data for that district. So the good news is we've learned that. The bad news is scaling professional learning and finding time on districts' professional learning calendars is not easy.
There's a lot of, you know, competing needs, I guess you describe
competing
it as.
Competing needs, absolutely.
Right.
Yes. So that's definitely been a big piece of learning for us. There's also some other things. So we launched, because we are in schools, we wanted to make sure this was a safe experience. So when we launched with this feature where there's moderation and every student response goes through this automatic check that assigns basically a value of if there's evidence in that of threats of violence or self-harm or sexual content. And if there is, it basically raises a red flag. It stops the conversation there and then for students sends an email to the teacher. And one of the first feedbacks we got from districts was, we would like to get those emails too, because for liability reasons, we think it's important that it doesn't just go to the teacher. And we said, you know, so it's those kinds of things about school districts and working in school districts where we would say, okay, yes, we can make that happen. And be able to make sure that there's a person in the district office who also is getting some of those alerts as needed. So some of that have also been learnings just about how we build a system that's specific to schools, as opposed to some of the models. I'm sure, you know, folks talk about ChatGPT all the time. That doesn't have any of those guardrails in it and those kind of safety features. So thinking about, for us, learning how to build in those features to be used specifically in an education environment has been important.
Thinking about let's use the school as a unit. And so in it, there's right there our most important resource, which is our teachers. And you mentioned earlier in the conversation the potential of how we think about, you know, scaling teachers and best practices, et cetera. Khan Academy, in the meantime, because of its history, is probably considered by those that know it as, oh, that's that student resource. Right. So they have this image, whether it's, you know, an AI concept or not. Oh, that's where students go to get help. In the meantime, now teachers are learning about how to use AI via the work that you're doing at Khan Academy. So as opposed to teachers maybe thinking, oh, my gosh, here we go. There's this other, you know, initiative, and this is another random act of improvement we're supposed to think about. And how are you learning at Khan, and therefore are we learning, you know, through you, what teachers are experiencing in terms of the power potential of this tool? Because it's not just for students, right? It's how this can improve their practice and scale their best practice. And so even, you know, from maybe both ends of the spectrum of, oh my gosh, this is complicated, I don't know if I want to learn this, to I had no idea. And now the more I play, the better I get. Can you talk to us about that?
This was definitely a learning for us. When we first launched in March, we had a couple of things that teachers could do on it related to their work. One of the first ones was help me write a lesson hook. So you could interact and Conmigo would help you brainstorm. What are you going to do in that first 5 minutes of class to grab attention and activate prior knowledge for your students? And we had created a little activity where students or teachers could go and have that conversation with Conmigo to get some ideas and brainstorm. As soon as we started showing this to teachers, they started asking us for more things. So they said things like, can it help me write quiz questions? Some of our district administrators said, you know what, our new teachers really struggle to unpack standards into learning objectives. Could it help you do that? And we're like, let's see. So we worked on that. We spent a good amount of time on a lesson planning tool. We found it's easy to get Conmigo to write a lesson plan, but it's pretty difficult to get it to write a good lesson plan. And so we used some new advanced tricks on the prompting side to get lesson plans to happen. And we actually used a rubric that teacher preparation programs use to help grade teacher lesson plans, to grade the lesson plans that Conmigo was producing. And it started off pretty deficient in where it was going. And we've kind of gotten it now on the rubric up to where it's finally getting to be pretty good at the kind of writing a 5-part lesson plan and what it's doing. So all of those are ways that teachers, again, it's not replacing the teacher. It's helping the teacher do things they have to do in their everyday activities. Ideally, helping them save some time doing those so they can focus on thinking about what they can do with their students and building those student relationships and building those kinds of activities instead of spending their time on kind of these more administrative and planning tasks.
In a previous conversation I had specific to AI, we're really focused on this concept of fear. That you used the word replacing and you said not replacing. It's not replacing. I think that sometimes the narrative can easily spin to that it may or it will or look out, be ready, because this technology will be able to. Are you noticing that as teachers are willing to mess around and learn and tinker, that fear subsides and they start to see this as a tool, or does skepticism grow? You would know more than I. I'm only making assumptions. And then, of course, I hear stories about even sometimes contract negotiations happening in districts specific to a worry of, wait a minute, we're talking about a teacher in the classroom, right? Not some AI model. It's a teacher as in a physical. It's really wild to watch what's happening, which is, fear-based. What are you seeing teachers warm up once they start tinkering and messing around?
So most of what we see with teachers is as soon as they start actually interacting with it and seeing what it can do and what it can't do, they mostly think, yeah, this is not me. This is not going to be able to replace the things that I do.
Got it.
I am much more skilled than this is. And I think they're right in that. I do think that what may contribute to fear is some lack of trust that folks outside the classroom will see that difference. We'll see the difference between what a skilled teacher does and what the AI does. And so I think it does behoove us to make sure that we are communicating that all of this AI technology is doing things that can help assist the teacher. But if you look at the core things that a teacher does, a teacher caring about the outcomes of their students, connecting with a student and seeing what their goals are and what their aspirations are and connecting what they're doing to that. None of that's happening with an AI, and that all of that is so important. But we need to make sure that there aren't folks who are in other kinds of decision-making seats that don't understand the difference between what the AI is doing and what the teacher's doing.
Do you see that as a mutual opportunity, with a leader like Khan Academy and school districts? Because as legislation is a very delicate and tricky thing, right? It can very easily from, even if there are pure motives, sometimes some major change happens and sweeps communities and states, and even more so based upon somebody's concept or idea, which, by the way, is not an informed one. So do you see that as also a future hurdle on being really clear what this is, but also what it isn't, so that sweeping change that is not good change kind of stays at bay?
It is important, but it's not something that we at Khan Academy can do ourselves. We don't have any policy arm or legislative. So we've joined in to, for example, there's a consortium called teachai.org. And I think you had Pat Young.
Yeah, that's right. He talked about it.
And so we are joining with code.org, with ISTE, which is the International Society for Technology and Education, ETS, and a whole, you know, at this point, hundreds of steering committee members to come together to be able to address and make a louder voice on issues like this. So that I think together it's important for us to not just be a single voice in talking about what this is and can be and what it's not, but that together a group of folks that are all thinking about artificial intelligence can come together, think about what are good policies, what should legislation look like, and be able to contribute to that conversation.
Yeah, Pat did talk about that kind of impressive collaboration, that crew of entities that is working together, which I was delighted to hear that these entities were all in the same sandbox together, especially on something that can sometimes, you know, things can get competitive and people have different spaces, but to see these entities can say, let's work on this together. It's not a, I thought that was fantastic. So that's good to hear that you're in that sandbox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so then, you know, some like to, and by the way, occasionally I will pick on education because it's important that we sometimes are honest about what's happening. And what we have known is that there's, if you compare us to other industries, education, other industries, it's fair for some to maybe question, when has the disruption happened? When was the disruptor in education where things truly were changed kind of on their head on in relative to what's best for kids? And how are models significantly different now, specifically, I mean, related to the world kids are graduating into, compared to what it was like, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago? And sometimes that's a really interesting and valid argument. Do you see this as this AI and what we're learning as a potential disruptor? And that's doesn't have to be a negative word, a disruptor. And what may we even assume could happen over time? I mean, in 2021, you weren't thinking about this. Right? It started with an email, right?
That's
to
right.
Sal.
That's right.
Hey. And from there, wow. But based on what we've learned so far, is there potential for a positive disruptor around the corner?
It's a good question. And I try to walk the line between, oh my God, this is going to change everything, and this is going to be just another technology that ends up not doing anything. I think there's some place in the middle where this is going to be. Education in generally, as you said, is fairly resistant to change, but there's a good reason for that. We don't want kids just swinging back and forth from one fad to another and where that is. So I do think it's important for us to be gathering some efficacy evidence around these technologies and to do the research and see, does using these technologies help students learn? And that's something that we are also in the process of doing, again, with those districts that are our partners and are willing to work with us on sharing data and doing that research to really demonstrate if these interventions are effective. And I think that's, we shouldn't be, you know, just diving in blindly before we see some of that data and get some of that information. But I do think there's a couple of reasons that I'm particularly optimistic about AI. Having been in this education technology space for a while, this is the technology, I've never seen as many early adopters of a technology as I have with this. It seems to have captured people's imaginations. So that's the first thing. And the second is, I think it puts a lot of potential power in the hands of teachers and students. It's not doing something to them. It's doing something with them. And they don't need to buy new hardware. They don't need to program it themselves. They can interact with it in their language, natural language, English or some other language. And they can work with it and feel like it's a partner as opposed to something that's being done to them. So for those reasons, I'm optimistic that it may potentially lead to change where past changes have not. But I think we need the evidence and we'll see what's to come.
Well, number one, that was a really key, thing you said, right? The verse, not to, but with. I think that's important for us to remember. And it's also important for, I'll send the message to you that that's why organizations like the Khan Academy are really important. I mean, education is sometimes critiqued of where's the R&D? Well, we forget what we're trying to do at times. It's easy to say from afar, but as a parent, if someone were to say, do you mind if I do some kind of basic research and development on the learning trajectory of your child and maybe take some, major swings at the bat on some experiment? I love these kids too much. I don't think so, right? I mean,
yep.
So it's really hard for a system to say, you know what, we're going to take some major risks on the heels of our kids, right?
Yep.
So for Khan Academy to wisely and strategically take these steps kind of with, on behalf of, to help districts and teachers and students learn about the potential and maybe even sometimes the pitfalls of this work is really important. I assume that you're empowered by that because there's no way a public district can do this on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has to be that partnership. The districts that are willing to, say, hey, we're willing to try some new things, but let's do it in a smart way. Let's do it where we're understanding what's working, giving feedback about what's not working. That's where the power is for exactly the reasons you said. We want to do this in a careful way that's not putting any of our kids' learning at risk.
So the leadership circle that we support, most of our, almost all of our, except for this, most of our processes are what we call roundtable processes. We say circles are better than rows. But if this is the famous last question we ask all of our guests on this is if we were to pretend you and I were around a table and we weren't talking at, but rather with leaders. So from superintendents all the way down through principals, let's not label them, but educational leaders. And we were in a discussion, maybe there was this Q&A happening. You looked up and realized, okay, I got to go. This meeting's about over. What would you want to leave leaders with? What would be kind of your, here's my elevator speech, my brass tacks recommendations for you as leaders specific to this topic of AI and education. What would you advise them on? What would you say?
So first, at a big level, make your decisions based on hope, not fear. So think about what could be. Of course, be cognizant of what the pitfalls and the downfalls might be. Be on the lookout of those. Be particularly on the lookout for things that we haven't thought about yet that could happen. But let your decisions also be guided in terms of the hope for the future that could be, how we can improve on what we have now, how we can help those kids who we know are still struggling. We see that there's still so many kids that are not getting the skills that they need. And think about how can we build in a vision that has hope for those students? And think about what are the tools in our toolkit that can help that happen?
Okay, so hope, not fear. So, and the fact that, once again, there is an entity that's kind of learning side by side with districts on this and able to, create the capacity to do this. Because as you know, districts don't have the capacity. They don't have, teams of 10 for this R&D work, right? And so I have to assume that from a student perspective, we even before we started, you heard from Chris, our producer, thanking you because you work at Khan Academy for the impact that it's had with his daughter. You've probably heard stories like that. And I have to hope that you also hear stories from teachers and districts, systems.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this work with us.
We absolutely do. We never get tired of hearing them and are always happy to hear other folks. But it is, we know that folks trust Khan Academy, and we don't want to give any reason why folks should break that, why we should break that trust. We want to have folks continue to trust in us, in the content that we provide and the experience we have for learners and how we help them succeed. So that informs everything we do. How do we keep that partnership and make sure that that mutual trust is involved in all of the new things that we're trying?
Well, I have been giddy waiting for this conversation only because I find that I'm learning so much, and I have to hope that as I learn by talking with you, it helps elevate some information for other people too. That's the intent behind this, and I'm so thankful that you are willing to carve out some time in your busy schedule to chat with us. So thank you so much, Kristen.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And this won't be the last time our paths will cross again soon.
Excellent.
Ladies, gentlemen, educators, leaders, I'm hoping that you kind of not only, you know, peel some information from that discussion, but that ending point of, you know, let's focus on hope, not fear. And sometimes that's really difficult to do in education because at times it's easy for us to feel a little bit under attack and overwhelmed. But if we can find the space and capacity to hope and not be fearful and find partners to help us with this work, incredible things can happen for kids. So I have to assume that you enjoyed that conversation just as much as I. Once again, thank you for your noble work. Be well.